yeah, we're calling you. Hey boys, we got things to do. Hey boys, can the girls talk to you? And boys are always making so much noise, cause it's all about boys.
Alright, welcome to the long-awaited second episode of Literally Patty Murin, the podcast. I am not Patty Murin. I am Broadway World and Broadway Radio's Matt Tamanini, and I am joined across a thousand-ish miles, I guess, by the one and only. A thousand-ish. That voice is Patty Murin. Patty, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Long time no talk.
I know. I'm sorry. And it's not like I haven't been talking. I'm talking constantly. I just haven't been able to, you know, find a time to sit down and talk.
Yeah. Well, the original plan was like a month after the first episode was to talk to a certain Broadway royalty member who she got a little busy. She's out, I think, in California being a gypsy right now.
Yep.
And she was a little busy. You were a little busy. You had some things going on that I read about, but I don't know anything about them other than that. So things were busy, but we're back. We're doing a Literally Ask Patty or hashtag Literally Ask Patty episode where we've gotten a ton of questions from listeners. Ooh. And it was interesting as we put out these tweets and you kind of retweeted them to see the cross-section of people that replied, because there were some ardent Broadway fans, but there were fans of like the Arrowverse as well.
Oh, yes.
Arrowverse people are great. And Arrow's the only one of those shows that I didn't jump on at the very beginning, but I'm a member of the Berlanti fan club. So maybe
are
we can.
You?
I am. So I love those shows. I'm a big comic book nerd as well. So lots of women will get into those as well. I hadn't planned on that, but you're kind of on the fringes of that and going to the cons and all that stuff. So,
yep.
So that's fun. Okay. So we got a ton of questions.
Okay.
We probably won't be able to get through them all, but we'll get through as many as possible, and I'll, of course, have some of my own questions. But before we get started, we're recording on Tuesday. So, Patty, why don't you tell people where you are and what you did last night?
Well, let's see. Right now, I am in Chicago, in our apartment in Chicago. Last night, I did a couple of things. I came home a little bit late. I watched Bachelor in Paradise, but I jumped in a little bit late because I was actually working on set at Chicago Med, because my character, Dr. Nina Shore on Chicago Med, who made some appearances last season, is going to be back this season for a whole handful of episodes.
That's awesome. And so that actually goes nicely into one of our first questions from Savannah at Rhodes Bucky. She'd asked if you'd be returning to Chicago Med. Were there any, like, were your hands elbow deep in any bodies last night?
No, it was a lot of microscope work last night.
Ah.
That's the other part of pathology, is looking at the diseases. Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of the Dr. House of Chicago Med.
I mean, a little bit, a whole lot cheerier, let's say that. A lot happier.
Okay, fair enough. No limp? She doesn't limp?
No, not that I know of. Not yet. You never
Good.
Know.
Okay, let's start these questions off officially, which what I think is probably the most important question of them all. At Linzaroo wants to know what your favorite Schmackery's cookie flavor is. And of course, we know whatever it is. It cannot have fruit in it.
No. Oh, God, no. Ugh. I'm going to say, I know that I have kind of a rule where I don't believe in dessert that doesn't have chocolate in it. But honestly, the Funfetti Schmackery's cookie is probably the one that every time I'm like, holy crap, how could this be so good? So I'm gonna kind of go off of my own beliefs, and I'm going to say for Schmackery's, it's going to be Funfetti. Gets me every time.
I can go along with that. I love anything birthday cake related. Oh. So yeah. Okay, so let me ask this question. Are you okay with, like, things that are fruit-flavored but don't actually have fruit in them? Like, I love the fake banana runts, even though they don't taste anything like banana. So, like, something like that, are those acceptable to you?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Like, gummy bears and, like, you know, any sort of candy that is just can't. It's candy, you know?
Okay.
It's just when you get into, like you know, lemon tart and, like, raspberry cream pie and, like, it's just – I don't believe in it. I don't think it's a thing. It's someone somewhere was like, ooh, how can I get my kids to eat fruit and dessert? And then they just kind of spun off from there. Strangely enough, I actually have a niece, my niece Reagan, who's 10. She grew up and did not like cake, didn't really like cupcakes, but she devours fruits and vegetables. Like, it is her freaking job. Yeah, I know. It's so strange. Yep. They used to have to threaten her with, like, if you don't eat, you know, your meat, you can't have your vegetables.
It's like the opposite of a Pink Floyd song there. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's crazy. Yep.
Okay. All right, yep. That's not, weird. I would get her tested for something. I don't know what, but that's
not. I don't know who's where she comes from, but.
Okay, so like we said, a lot of these questions have theater tense. So I wanted to start off, since this is Broadway radio, let's start off with some of the theater ones first. Catherine Diamond at SkyFan77 asked, "What was your first theater performance you remember as a child, or what show or song originally stole your heart?"
Oh my goodness. Well, there's a couple answers to this. The first Broadway show that I saw was Cats. It was. I'm like the cliche theater kid of the 80s. I think I was 6 years old at the time. My parents and I think my grandmother brought me and my siblings to see Cats. And that sort of started in the whole live theater situation. My parents were very, very, very good. We grew up about an hour north of New York City. They were really great about bringing us down to Broadway whenever possible. We'd always go and get tickets beforehand, stand on the TKTS line. My grandma would take us for our birthday. Every time we wanted to go, we'd go and just sort of see what was available and go see that. So Cats. Also, I do remember very specifically, I grew up listening to a lot of Barry Manilow.
Oh. that explains a lot, Patty.
I'm a fan of Lo. I've been to 3 concerts.
Wow.
My mom and her sisters were all big Barry Manilow fans. And so I remember that one of his cassette tapes was like a big, it was all Broadway songs. And so we used to listen to that. So when I heard Memory, the version of Memory that I remember is not from the Broadway show Cats. It's from Barry Manilow's Broadway album. So I guess you could say that Memory was sort of, you know, like, the first song that really stole my heart. But I guess the one that really, the first show that made me realize that I could do this and it was something I really wanted to actually be a part of as opposed to just watch was The Secret Garden. Because I saw that when I was 10 and Daisy Egan was roughly my age and it sort of was like, oh, she's doing this. And the freaking soundtrack to that show still kills me every time. I think it's one of the best scores that I've ever heard. So that was the one that, like, the next phase of life to be like, ooh, I want to do shows too, was Secret Garden.
Wow. That's all. And Daisy's going to do Secret Garden again in Washington, D.C. this fall. She's going to play Martha. So that's awesome. Okay, so on the last time we were doing one of these shows, you talked with your friend Andrew Rannells about going and seeing the revival of Cats. Have you seen it yet?
We have. We did.
You did? Okay. So
we sure did.
How did it go? Did it, like, it's different when you see a show as a kid, and even though this isn't the same production, I mean, it's, from what I hear, it's fairly similar. It, like, it's so different from seeing it from the eyes of a child and then an adult.
Absolutely.
So what were your impressions?
Oh my God, I went through so many emotions in the first 2 minutes of that show, because as soon as the overture started, I cried, because it was like that, like, moment of like, oh my God, this is the show that introduced me to this career that I have right now, like this love and this passion for this art form. And so I was so emotional, and the, you know, the cat eyes coming down the aisles and stuff. And then as soon as they like leapt into like the whole first number, the first, you know, dance number, Angelical Cats, Angelical Balls, I was like, what the hell is happening right now? I was like, and it finally hit me. I was like, these are cats dancing and singing. And then after like 2 minutes, you're like, all right, yeah, great. And you just kind of settle into it. I mean, the show, it was incredible. What those people are doing is like, I don't understand. They don't stop moving for like 2.5 hours. And like, the other thing I don't think I realize is that this is a full length Broadway musical. It's not like a 90-minute extravaganza. It's not like one of those that even cheats and it's like act one is an hour and act two is 40 minutes. It's like, no, this is like a full on, I mean, those are the skinniest cats I've ever seen in my life. going through the whole thing, I was like, it was amazing, because half of me was remembering this as a kid, and the other half is like, oh, these are my friends. Like, look at my friends doing this. This is fantastic. Yeah. So, I mean, I still don't know what the hell a Jellicle cat is. I don't understand what a Jellicle ball is. I don't know. I refuse to Google it for some reason. I feel like the mystery is just the way to go with this one.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but yeah, we had a ball.
A Jellicle ball.
We had a Jellicle ball.
Now, you've done a lot of dancing. You've done, like, you know, Xanadu, you know, there were roller skates involved and stuff. So, like, you've done some physically demanding stuff. But could you ever see yourself doing those cat dances?
Maybe, like, if I was, I don't know, like a fat cat or something. Like, if I was, like, the, like, non-feature dancer cat, you know, like the one that, like, had a specialty number, but maybe was in the back for the group numbers, you know?
Fair enough.
I don't do the leaps and the turns and things. I'm not like a technically trained dancer. I have done a lot of physical stuff with Lysistrata Jones and some other shows that I've been a part of, and I love it. Oh God, I love it so much. But that kind of stuff, that and like Fosse, I'm like, nope, I'm good. I'll watch.
All right, fair enough. Okay, moving on. I don't know how to pronounce this one. Maybe Detour, or maybe it's French. Maybe it's Detois, at Detois. He Ooh. Or she asked, I know, I have no idea, asked, what is your dream Broadway role? And then if you have a nightmare role, what is a role you'd never want to play?
Oh, man. Ooh. Well, I'll go with the nightmare one again, because it's not a nightmare I don't think it's a nightmare for most people, but for me, I would never, ever, ever want to swing a show again. My very first Broadway show was Xanadu, and I was the swing for 6 months before I got bumped up into an actual role. And I was, I don't know, maybe it was because I was so much younger, I did it. But now when I watch shows and I watch these people that truly cover like 10 and 12 different tracks, and they're so good at it and so flawless, and just that's what they are amazingly built for, their brains and their bodies. To me, I think I would curl up in the middle of the stage in a ball and just cry and quit. So even though I've done it before, you know, I'm not talented enough to do that again. And then dream role, oh my gosh. I mean, there's a few. I've always wanted to play Ellen in Miss Saigon. Whenever a Princess Bride musical gets or play or anything gets anywhere near Broadway, I always say that my husband Colin and I really feel like we were built for that, like really, truly. So those are sort of the one that's from a revival of a show and then one from a show that, God, I really hope happens and I'm not 48 by the time it does.
Well, I think Andrew Lippa was writing a Princess Bride show at one point and then it kind of fell away and then, or maybe it was, I don't remember.
It was Adam Gettle.
Okay, that's right. Gettle. Yeah.
Yep. And he was writing with William Goldman, who wrote the book. And it just, that was probably like, oh my gosh, like 12, 14 years ago at this point. Yeah, really has. So yeah, and then apparently Disney owns the property now, and so and then there was something about a play or a I don't know. I'm unclear as to where that is in development, but I haven't gotten any phone calls yet. Let's just put it that way.
Well, if only we knew somebody who worked for Disney. Okay, moving on. This might overlap with maybe the last question, but maybe not. But Cindy at Pimsy Pim. These are great Twitter handles.
I know, I love that.
If you could only play one character for the rest of your career, who would you choose and why? And I guess this could be one you've already played, one you haven't played, or even one maybe on TV or something, because those are roles that could potentially last forever.
Yeah. I have to say that, if I did have to play a role for the rest of my life, and that was it, that's all I could do, I would want it to be a TV role, just because I do love theater and creating the same thing over and over again. But I just maybe think that after, like, I don't know, like 2 to 3 years, you'd start to feel a little bit like Groundhog Day, like you're living it. And so I would TV role. Oh, man.
I guess it could be in a character type. If you don't have to pick, like, I want to take over for this person or I want to do this.
Yeah. I think I would really like to play, I would say, Lysistrata Jones for the rest of my life, because she's, you know, right. She's fairly young. So like, I'd love to see where she goes in life and what she does. Cause I feel like she would really sort of like span she'd get into politics. She'd get into like probably fashion and she'd get into some sort of athletic commentary. I think that she could go in a variety of directions. And so I'd be really curious to see. And also she's so positive and stuff. And so at least if I was doing something like for the rest of my life, it's not like, you know, playing a victim of torture or something like that. Cause I think that would get depressing.
I would think so. Yes, absolutely. Well, okay. You speak of Lysistrata Jones as she talks about sports. That leads me to a great question from Lindsay Webb at Lindsay Webb. She said, finish this sentence. If blank was an Olympic sport, you would win a gold medal.
Oh my God. Snuggling puppies, drinking rosé, watching Bachelor franchise TV shows. Those are the three that come to mind right away. I could literally, how about snuggling puppies while drinking rosé watching The Bachelor?
I mean, I think they might as well give you the gold medal now. I don't know that there's anyone else.
I don't even think anyone else would compete. So I feel like it would just be all of them would be mine.
You would get gold, silver, and bronze. And absolutely. Okay.
Good question.
That's a great question. Okay, so speaking of the Bachelor franchise, you have been known to write about the Bachelor franchise in the past. And that kind of, I believe, if I'm getting things, my chronology in order, is that kind of led to this creation of your blog. So I wanted to transition into some of the blog posts you've written recently. You kind of took a few months off and then posted something about Bachelor in Paradise a few weeks ago, and then got back into it with two really personal blogs over the past week. So the first one that I want to talk about is called Sometimes an Actor Writes a Blog Post After a Long Drought, which is a great title. And I don't want to misinterpret this, so correct me if I'm wrong since you wrote it, but the crux of it is essentially that as an actor, and I guess in life in general, sometimes things happen that you don't plan or expect, and sometimes they suck. But if you stay positive and keep working, sometimes those difficult things lead to even bigger and better things in the end. Is that a fair summation?
Yes, I think so. It's funny because when I started writing it, I started writing it as something so totally different. Like I started with the impetus of like, oh, these are things that people who do not live the life of an actor every day, who just, you know, love theater, like maybe they don't know things that are misconstrued or just, you know, and that it sort of started with the one where I said that, you know, sometimes the opening night parties aren't the exciting part. It's about walking in your stage door. And I had like a whole paragraph about that. And then as I kept writing, it just sort of kept going more into like, oh, okay, all right, yep. And then by the end, I just sort of read back. I mean, it's sort of what happens when I write my blog. I start with something, and then I end up with something else, and I read it back, and I'm like, okay. And before I can really lose my nerve, I press publish, and then I, like, sit and, like, cower for, like, 3 to 4 minutes while I'm like, oh, God, people are reading it right now. But, yes, what you said is exactly how it ended up. For whatever reason or intention, you know, that happens, that's apparently what I needed to write about that day.
Okay. So what is the response? I know we've talked about some of the responses to some of your other blogs in the past. But what has the response been to this one?
Really great. Really great. From actors, from people who are not actors, who just love actors. It's been really awesome. I mean, you know, I try to be as positive as possible, even if I am like writing a critique of something or someone or some, you know, general movement. I do try to like, I try to be as cut and dry as I can. And I try not to put things in too flowery of terms. So it is nice when, especially to me, when other actors come forward and they say like, this is really, really awesome and very spot on. So it's been good. It's been nice.
Very nice. Okay. So there's a little passage in here that I want to read, and then we don't need to get into specifics about it, but I want to talk about the general feeling that goes with this. And that section is, sometimes they make you audition for roles you've literally created and played for 6 months. And sometimes they give your role to someone else. And sometimes you have to look at press photos on Twitter of the person who got it, who is wearing your old costumes. And sometimes that's a really terrible feeling. I think anybody who probably follows you or is listening to this can read between the lines as to what you're talking about. But I don't necessarily want to talk about, you know, that specific, because that's neither here nor there, and people can gossip about whatever they want. But when I read that, it took me back to something you said on the first episode with Andrew about how when you go through the audition process, whether you start the audition process really interested in being in this show, by the time you get to the point where you're getting callbacks or it's final callbacks or they're making a decision, it's life or death almost to the point where you want this role. Whether it's in that situation or it's in a show maybe you played out of town that's coming to Broadway, how do you deal with things that you don't get? Because everyone knows, they hear the stories, people are rejected 9 times out of 10, you know, to get that one role. Part of being an actor is rejection. How do you learn to deal with that, especially in situations where you are already invested even before the audition process starts?
I think that there's many ways you can do it. I think that you know, there is varying degrees of disappointment that goes into things like this. You know, it depends on what, a lot for me, depends on how, like, what's happening in my own life at that point. If I am more satisfied with my own life, it's easier to sort of be like, oh, great. As you do, you know, come through sort of this crazy gamut of like audition stuff, you get to know the people you're auditioning with. And like, you know, as cheesy as it sounds, like you start, you do, at least at the very least, you develop a true respect for the people that you see at the same auditions that you go to. You become friends with many of them. You support them, you know, and while it just becomes very clear to you that while you're all 10 of you are sitting there. You're like, oh, well, you know, if someone wants Bryn O'Malley for this part, they want Bryn O'Malley for this part. They don't want Patty Murin. That's fine. It's actually fine. And so you just, I think as you sort of come more into your own as a person, you recognize that it is not about your talent. It's really, truly not about your talent. And also half the time we don't even hear the rejection because you just go in and they're like, thank you. And you're like, bye. And then you go home and you like, you know, like walk your dogs or you go to another audition or you like go to your show that night or, you know, you write your blog and that's that. And then all of a sudden a few weeks later, you're like, oh, look at that announcement. Great. Kate Rockwell got that part. Good for her. And then you move on and that's that. So.
Okay. That's good. I mean, I like you name checking two other actresses that are not involved with the project that you specifically were referencing in that blog post. But, yeah, but those two are both great. I love Bryn and Kate. Yeah. They're awesome. So, okay. I want to get back to your other blog post here in a few minutes, the most recent one. We'll get back to that. But talking about your blog that you mentioned, some things you hinted at, I think this is a perfect time to transition into a special segment that we're going to do for no specific potential show reason whatsoever, just something. I live in Orlando, so I figured I'd do a section about this type of stuff. So first, Maddie, who is at Lipstick and Wi-Fi, another great Twitter handle.
Yeah, Lipstick and Wi-Fi.
Yeah, wants to know what your favorite Disney song is.
Oh, my God. Oh, everyone who submitted questions, I actually did not look at the questions beforehand. I just looked to make sure there were questions at all, which thank you for submitting all of them and for making me, you know, like giving me validation. oh, geez, favorite Disney song. Oh, man, this is a tough one. I mean, huh.
You can go with like, the top three if you feel like you need to. I feel like
Part of Your World is just a friggin' like...
Because you've played Ariel. You played Ariel at the Muni at one point.
At the Muni, yes. And singing that song in front of just 10,000 like people and 5,000 children dressed up as princesses is like a feeling you just can't replicate. That one, I also love the little known I Won't Say I'm in Love from Disney's Hercules. That's a sensible David Zippel, one of my favorite people and artists in the entire world. And, how could you not love you some Let It Go from The Frozen?
What is that? I'm unfamiliar.
It's from this movie called Frozen.
Okay. Whatever. So, Jesse, on a similar theme, at Broadway Jesse with an I like you,
yes.
Asked what your favorite Disney movie is.
Ooh, favorite Disney movie. Oh, okay. So I like how specific these are, you know, because it's like song, movie, like it's favorite Disney.
And she didn't necessarily say Disney musical, so I guess it could be, you know. A lot of different things. I guess if you want to throw in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you technically
could. No, I can't.
Could.
Oh, God, no.
No? Okay.
That's too many.
No, that's right. You guys are, you're DC family.
I ask it every day. I'm like, wait, is Arrow DC or Marvel? And he's like, DC. And I'm like, I thought it was Marvel. I don't know.
No.
Favorite Disney movie? Oh. I mean, I'm automatically thinking of the cartoons now. I don't know if I'd even be able to think of the, you know, all the live action ones. But I'm going to say, this is really sort of.
It cuts deep. This cuts deep for a lot of people. And for
like Sophie's Choice between like 13 different things.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the latest Toy Story movie.
Oh, I think that's three, right? Toy Story 3, one. Yeah, where they, like, get thrown away.
Oh, my God. So many reasons.
Don't
First
cry.
Of all, I go back again and again and again, and I watch the Ken sequences on YouTube, like, his little, like, fashion things over and over and over again, because I think it's maybe the most brilliant. It's the most brilliant thing I've ever seen. And also at the end, I really truly, when I saw that movie, I thought that it was over. I was like, because they made such a big deal of it being like the last Toy Story movie, which we now know is not true. But like, I was like, oh my God, they are going to physically get rid of these toys. And like, they really drew it out to the last possible second until everyone in that theater was sobbing. And then it was like, oh my God. So that one was the one that I think affected me in the moment more than I think any other Disney movie has, for sure.
Yeah. I remember seeing it in the theater as well, and I'm not ashamed to say that there were tears as well. Was, so I feel you on that.
That was a rough moment. Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, and we're pretty close to the same age, I think. And so we came up when Disney was really reestablishing itself as a force in movies. So a lot of these movies go deep into childhood and really are the formative pieces of movie making that I associate with, and I assume the same for you.
Yes, absolutely. Like, I still remember seeing The Little Mermaid in the theater when I was with my mom when I was like 9 or 10, and it was like they're the new classics.
Absolutely. Okay, to wrap up this section, Patty, it's Labor Day's like in a week and a half from right now when we're recording. That kind of means summer's over, and even though I live in Orlando, Florida, where it's kind of summer year round, I am already looking to my summer plans for next year. And I hear that Denver is a beautiful place to visit in the summer. Do you have any insights on that
topic? I've actually never been to Denver before. I've seen it as I drove through the Rocky Mountains a couple of years ago, but I've never been there. I've heard it is an amazing spot. A good friend of mine, Sierra Bogus, is from the Denver area, and she was very fortunate to get to go back. Oh my gosh, was that almost 10 years ago? To do The Little Mermaid when they did their out-of-town tryout there. And so,
A Disney musical did an out-of-town tryout at the Denver Center for the Performing Arts. Okay, I'm going to file that away for future reference.
Fingers are always crossed. We'll just leave it at that. Fingers, you never know what's going to happen in this business that I love and want to strangle at the same time. but let's just say that hopes are always high and fingers are always crossed for good things.
I love it. That's a great way to end that little special segment. Now, when we were kind of advertising for questions about this episode, I put out a couple different tweets, and one of them featured a picture of you talking about how smart you were because you were wearing a sweatshirt that said something to the effect of, I'm voting for pizza for president.
Oh, yeah, pizza for president. Yep.
Pizza for president. And Kelly Brianne at Speedy Canary 87 said that she must have that shirt, all caps. So before she tracks you down in Chicago or maybe goes to your place in New York and steals it, will you just tell her where you got it instead, maybe make things a little easier?
Yes, I got it from this amazing website called lookhuman.com. It's LOOKHUMAN, lookhuman.com. They have the best. They have like, I don't know, they come out with like 10 or 12 new t-shirts every single day. They have tote bags. They have throw pillows. They have blankets. They have all kinds of stuff. They've got mugs. I mean,
a few weeks ago, you posted a picture of a new mug you got.
It's the
Hillary Clinton Rosie the Riveter one, and I asked you where it was from, and you sent me that website, so I went ahead and ordered it as well. So good for lookhuman.com.
Oh, yeah, I'm an unofficial ambassador of them just because I love them.
Okay, all right. On a similar topic, Kelly Smith at Kelly J Smith 1972 asked, if you could design the ultimate comfy socks, what would they be like?
Ooh, I have these socks from Uniqlo that I actually feel like are already the ultimate comfy socks. It's their fluffy yarn socks. Although to be completely honest, I actually did a search on Uniqlo the other day for fluffy yarn, and they have pants now, which they actually had when I was doing the Wicked tour, and I both bought them for me and D. Rossioli, just these fluffy yarn pants. They are the fluffiest, most comfortable, wonderful thing to put on your body. And then they came out with all these socks last year. So, of course, I bought like 10 pairs because that's what I do. And they're just like, I mean, they're cotton, but they're fluffy and they're yarn and it's awesome. That's okay.
Getting back to some serious-er questions, not that socks and sweatshirts aren't serious, but Eiler Thompson at Eiler Thompson wants to know, what is your favorite and most effective vocal warm-up?
If I'm in a show where I'm not really using, it's not like legit, I'm just sort of using my like just general natural belt, if it's a night show or like a, you know, an audition or whatever, if I have been speaking, I'm usually pretty warmed up just because I tend to sort of speak in that tone. I do a whole lot of the like yay, like a lot of those in the shower to kind of get everything moving.
Is that something you'll do every day, whether or not you're performing or not? Is it just like part of your routine to warm up no matter what's going on in your day?
No, it probably should be. I like to make sure I can use my voice, you know, like if I wake up and it's early, or, you know, if I have to like, you know, something like this, or and I have to like talk for a while, then yes, I will. This morning, I also like to exercise in the morning because I find that that really sort of warms up your entire body, and in a way that just doing like static vocal warm-ups in the shower can't do. So that I actually find works better for me, is to actually get my body moving instead of just my chords.
Cool. Very cool. Okay. Sarah Jones at Sarita Yahones asked, what do you think has been your biggest learning experience as an actor?
I mean, oh my gosh, there's been so many. The learning experiences are always the things that come from the disappointments. Even though you learn when you're happy about stuff and you learn when things are going really well, you're not really paying as much attention to the educational value of it. So probably I'm still going to go back to Liz Estrada Jones and say that, you know, the thing that is supposed to be your big break and what is, you know, you can't believe it's happening to you and it's so exciting, and then it just flops. That was probably the biggest like smack in the face a bit of like, oh, whoa, this is a business. This is a business. It's all about dreams coming true and all that great, amazing, like really, truly wonderful stuff. But it's a business. It is a business. It is about making money. It is, you know, it is about creating and it is about art, but there has to be a balance between the two. And so that was probably the most heartbreaking thing I'd gone through. So that was the one that took me the longest to recover from, but was the most educational, I would say.
Yeah. Okay. We'll move from something that you learned from into something where I think you did a little bit of teaching, and that is your most recent blog post, which is an open letter in a response to someone else's open letter that I think criticized is a fair word. This other open letter criticized people who either refer to their pets as their children or refer to themselves as pet parents. You are a proud dog owner. And you took offense to that letter. And I have to say, I'm allergic to anything with fur or feathers. So I'm not an animal person per se. But I was really kind of moved by your blog and talking about at the heart of it that it's love in whatever form it takes on is a good thing to have in this world, especially with all the craziness that goes on around us on the everyday basis.
Yes. It's this letter that I found. I know that it's really annoying to people who have just had children or have toddlers or have children at all that, you know, when people try to compare their, like, their experiences with their dogs to, like, rearing an actual human being. But this person took it, like, really quite far. It made a whole list of why raising a child is not like raising a dog, which was actually, I thought, quite silly because obviously they kind of different.
Kind of goes without saying there, yeah.
Different species, yeah. So, but what angered me the most and made me the most offensive was someone telling someone else where to direct their love. I think that all living beings should, you know, deserve some sort of love or respect, or, you know, I mean, that sounded really dippy because I'm not like, you know, I'm going to kill a fly if I can. I'm going to kill a mosquito. Yeah. If it's going to bite me, I'm going to kill it. If it's got Zika virus, I'm going to kill it. But like, you know, let's start with mammals and reptiles and work our way from there.
Fair enough.
I love my dogs so much. And the things that my dogs have done for me and the happiness that they have brought me and the comfort and the responsibility that they forced me into through the hard times that otherwise I probably would have curled in my bed for 3 to 7 days. The fact that I have to get up and keep a living thing alive and happy and loving is, I think, incredible. And the fact that someone could, you know, would criticize an entire population of people for thinking that their pets are just as important or, you know, wonderful as children, it seemed silly to me. It also seemed silly to me that she was basically saying how difficult it is to raise a child, but you know, perhaps taking the time to write that blog post wasn't the best use of her time.
Oh. Yeah, that post was a little more snarky than most of them. You said you normally like to be positive, but this one, that one had a little bite to it.
Yeah. It was, I feel like when I have to really sort of take a stand on some things, I have to do it, you know, with the chat boards last year. Yeah. There's no real tiptoeing around that kind of stuff. I took care, especially with this one, not to delve into like, this is why you suck and like this is really messed up and like you're the worst, which of course is like what my like emotions were saying in the moment, but that's not really what I wanted to say to this woman. I'm sure she's a wonderful person, but it was more about just generally letting everyone know who maybe had come across a situation like this or who really loves their freaking pets a lot. Like, it's okay. That love is generates other love, and that's that. Oh my man, this is I find it difficult to find the words for it because everything that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, it's like you've got to just take every single bit of positivity that you can and just like just squirrel it away because and share it and like because times are real bizarre right now.
We don't need to get into that. That's there are certain things. Okay, so we're coming down the home stretch, but this one actually ties into that blog post. Megan at Cheesy One Line asked, if any animal in the world is now domesticated and you could have it as a pet, I'm going to rule out dogs because we know how much you love dogs, and I think that would be the default answer. What would you choose and why?
I think I'm going to go big on this one because I can go small and be like, I don't know, like some sort of cute mole or something.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with giraffe. I freaking love giraffes. I think they are the most phenomenal, unreal example of evolution that has ever existed. Like, there is an animal whose neck is taller than human beings. Just they're and they're like gentle and lovely and leggy and I mean their giraffe print, what do you call it, their coat, their fur,
something like that.
It's amazing. It's amazing. They are my favorite. They're my favorite to go see at the zoo. My life goal is to pet a giraffe. I know it's sad but true. I just want to like hug a neck or something. I don't know. I would have a giraffe. Yeah.
Giraffe works. All right. Yep. Well, we're coming down the home stretch here. So I've got a little section about your hubby here. So at Ange Trick asked, what is your dream show to star in opposite Colin?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, I kind of answered that with the Princess Bride thing.
Okay. How about an existing show?
Ready? I would love to do a revival of Crazy for You with my husband.
Oh, you guys would be really good in that.
And all he'd have to do is learn how to tap dance. But, like, honestly, he learns things so quickly, and he already can tap dance. Like,
yeah, you know. I saw Anything Goes twice. I mean, he can pull off a little bit of tap dancing.
Yeah. So, yep, he just has to learn a couple more steps, and I have to refresh all my steps, and I think I would. That's a dream of mine for sure. Crazy for You.
Okay, this is sticking out, so I could be wrong. Have you done Crazy for You before? Was that your first? I saw. That's what it was. Saw you talk with Jen Tepper about it online. It was your first professional gig.
Of 54 Below and Broadway history extraordinaire fame. She saw my very first show out of college. It was a non-equity production of Crazy for You at the Stage Door Theater in Coral Springs, Florida. And I played Polly, and it was like just the most fun to realize that you can get paid to do theater, but also to get to do a show like that. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's such a fun show. Okay, other than Colin, is there anyone who you are dying to do a show with?
Oh my God. I mean, the first person that comes to mind is Audra McDonald, but like,
I knew that's what you were going to say.
Such a stock answer, but like, oh, she means so much to me because going past all of her, like, you know, all that, like, talent and all those Tonys and crap like that, I think she's just one of the most inspiring women that we have in the world today existing at all. The fact that she's so open about her past with depression and everything that she's been through with that means a lot to me because I have also been open about my depression and whatnot. And she's been through it, and she is kind of a living example of even though the things that you see in front of you, like what she does on stage and what she's accomplished, you're still a human being and you still have emotions and you're still allowed to be a person. And so I'm fairly sure that her child that she is gestating right now is like the second coming of musical theater Christ. Because she is
that that she's gesting right now. I love that.
Gestating. Yep.
Yeah. Gesting. Okay.
Just
perfect.
She I mean, like, it's like every time that I think that she can't inspire me, she does it again. Like, she just got pregnant and, like, you know, she's not 30 anymore. And I was like, oh, all right. I still have a few years. I can still, like, I mean, she is my role model. And I try not to, like, creep out too much on her, like, fan out too much. Like, I try to really keep my distance and, like, but I think that she is one of the best role models that I have and that grown women have.
Good. I like that. Fair enough.
Grown women need role models too.
Absolutely. I think everybody needs role models.
Yep.
Absolutely. And Audra is as good of a person as anybody. So
yep.
I'm all for it. Okay. Real quick, since we teased this at the beginning, as I'm a fan of the Berlanti verse that your husband Colin was in at the very beginning with Arrow. He was on the first season of Arrow and then was killed off, but yet has remained a fan favorite to this day. I think he came back for one episode of Arrow last season. And who knows? The Flash is doing this whole time travel, rewriting history thing. So who knows? Maybe we'll see him again. But my question is, Greg Berlanti has, it's now going to be 4 shows on the CW that are about superheroes. And every single one of them has musical theater performers in them. Now, you have kind of watched from the sideline as Collins does all of these conventions and stuff. I know he did one this weekend. What do you think it is about musical theater performers, or maybe just theater performers in general, that work so well in these superhero universes?
I think it's because, like, musical theater and theater, it tends to be slightly larger and slightly more colorful than real life. And so it's kind of the same thing with the superhero worlds, is that it's more, you know, it's just a little bit bigger, a little bit, like, you know, a few more reds and blues and, you know, greens and stuff in there. And so I think that theater performers just don't have a problem kind of jumping into that size of performance. I also think that they're, like, so willing to commit to, like, anything can happen, you know, because when you're on stage and you have to break out into song, yeah, you can't be like, well, wait, this wouldn't happen in real life. Like, that's not, you can't have that, like, train of mind, you know? So I think that it's very easy for them to jump into the fantastical element of it and really sort of believe what they're saying and stuff. So yeah, it's pretty cool. They're kind of kicking butt over there.
Yeah, seriously. And I'm excited because Supergirl and Flash are going to do a crossover musical episode this year.
I know.
So I'm just hoping that Greg Berlanti gets everybody from all 4 shows that has a musical theater background. I mean, you've got, you know, Melissa Benoist and Jeremy Jordan and Grant Gustin. I mean, you got Victor, yep, Garber. I mean, and Sierra, yeah, Renee and Laura Benanti and yep, Carlos Valdez and Colin and Arthur Darvill. There's so many of them. It just seems like it would be foolish not to bring in the entire roster for something like that. So
yeah,
I've got my fingers crossed.
You know who else has actually an excellent voice?
And Jesse L. Martin. I can't believe I forgot Jesse L. Martin. Oh, but God. Yes, who?
Yeah. Stephen Amell actually has a great voice.
Really?
Yeah, he sings a song at all of his Knocking Point wine parties. He always gets up and sings with the band for a while. And he sang that, I think this was at Chicago. This is the first time I heard him. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, you can sing. I was like, did you know you could sing? And he was like, nope. But he's got a great, like, kind of like rock voice. Yep. So I feel like he could really wow everyone.
Yeah, and his cousin Robbie is part of the Berlanti verse as well, so maybe they could do a duet as well. Okay, all right, cool. So we're wrapping up here. I'm going to go through. We've got a handful of questions left that I want to get to, so we're going to just do rapid fire.
Okay,
just
I'm ready.
Give me the first answers that come to mind, okay?
Okay.
At Lindsay Webb asked, who are your favorite actors? And since we've already kind of talked about Audra, is there anyone you fangirl over other than Audra?
I tend to fangirl over, not necessarily, well, nope, anyone from, let's see, Gilmore Girls, or, like, let's see, I'd probably, like, a Saved by the Bell situation, or, like, Full House. So anything from my, like, younger year, yeah, teenage years, early 20s years, yes.
Both Saved by the Bell and Gilmore Girls are my top 5 favorite shows of all time, so, yeah,
yeah, it's real.
Yeah, J.S. Clark at Ah Liaisons asked, do you ever see yourself as Actors Equity president? You'd be a kick-ass person in that position.
No. I could see myself maybe not as president. I think maybe as a council member or something, perhaps. My mind has started to turn that way a little bit.
Okay. And Kate Schindel's awesome. So
yeah, forever
may she reign. Okay.
Seriously.
Why Kiwi Y at Galileek 3, and actually this kind of plays into what you talked about with Stephen Amell. What is your go-to karaoke song? And she said, I hope it's not the same as Stephen Amell's.
it's always been Total Eclipse of the Heart. That's just been what I do. Although I'm feeling the need for a change, so I feel like soon I should change it up a bit.
How about, do you want to build a snowman? Okay, moving on. At Linzaru again asked, what has been your favorite random holiday to celebrate so far with Party with Patty?
I have really liked the ones. I really liked National Single Awareness Day, Singles Awareness Day, because that was one where just sort of on a whim, I was like, oh, if you're single, tweet me and I'll, you know, say something nice to you. And I spent like 2 hours just like sitting and like tweeting with people. And it was just like really lovely to have so much connection with so many people. And like everyone was so lovely and positive. And it was awesome. I think that's the one that sticks out in my head the most. That and probably Rosé Day, but like, come on, that's, you know,
that's
most
every
days.
Day. Yeah.
Most day
okay. And, yeah. And Linzaru, actually, that plays in very nicely with this other question, which I think you kind of just answered. But she did ask, what's your favorite part of interacting with your Twitter followers? So is it something like that, or is it just on a more day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I think every day I really like, because I do see the same, you know, the same people commenting over and over again. And I love that. I feel like I'm actually getting to know specific humans as opposed to just Twitter handles. So that has been really, really nice. And especially because I've gotten to meet a lot of them at, you know, these conventions or whatever, or just concerts and stuff that I've done in New York. So it's always really cool to put a face to the Twitter handle.
Yeah, very cool. All right, last one, and this is my personal favorite question that anybody asked. Jerry at Stars Wednesday asked,
yeah, Jerry!
Do you know Jerry?
I love Jerry. Okay. I've known Jerry and Vicky since Xanadu.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. We won't say how long ago that was.
Nope.
But Jerry wanted to know, will you sing So Much Better from Legally Blonde at a gig, on YouTube, or some random New York City street? I told you, I warned you, you didn't read a lot of these questions, but I warned you, I love Legally Blonde, so I think you've got a podcast audience here, so you might as well bust out with, a, you know, 16 bars or something.
I mean, I will say, yes, So Much Better is going to be for sure in like whatever next like solo show I do. Larry O'Keefe and I are actually good friends, and I tell
He's
him
awesome.
All the time, I'm like, when they do Legally Blonde at the Hollywood Bowl, like over the summer, I was like, that's when I'm going to finally play Elle Woods, because, you know, it's far enough away that you can't see my face and how far removed in age I am from Elle Woods at this point. But also, like, that's it. You know, I'll do it for that and get stars for the other parts and we're good to go. Yeah, my favorite thing to sing, just in, like, general, this is probably one of the only phrases from musical theater that I sing on, like, probably, like, a weekly basis whenever it is necessary, is from the opening number of Legally Blonde. this is what I do. And sometimes I do it just to annoy my husband. Oh, my God, you guys. That's my favorite thing.
That's awesome. That's perfect. And I love the very nasal, almost Anna Lee Ashford part of that, since, you know, her voice is one of the first ones we hear sing that. That's
absolutely
awesome. I love everything. I was just talking with somebody yesterday about how much I love everything Lawrence O'Keefe has ever written. So between that and Bat Boy and Heathers,
he
needs
so
to do
much.
More.
And
he
so
needs
much
to do more
that you haven't even heard yet. There's new stuff that I've done stuff for. It's like, it's pretty killer working with him and his wife, Nell Benjamin, at the same time. It's like,
also it's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, and it's so interesting because this, we're kind of off script a little bit, so I won't take a whole lot of time, but like, you talk about, you know, Audra and Will, they're a married couple. You and Colin are a married couple. So we see that a lot with performers, but people like Jason Robert Brown and Georgia Stitt, and then Nell and Lawrence, we don't see it as much from them. What is that dynamic like? Not maybe not just for you and Colin, but working with somebody in the business, how do you guys balance the ups and downs that go along with each of your careers?
Oh man, you know, it takes a period of adjustment, but then you figure it out, you know, you figure it out. The good thing about actors being together is that it's very, very rare that you're working on the same thing. So, and even now, you know, working on Chicago Med, I'm separate from Colin. So like, you know, it's pretty much seems like we're working with the same people, but on different jobs. I do not know how married couples, you know, write together, because that makes me, like, for myself, like, that makes me nervous to think about, like, working with Colin in, like, a super, like, creative creation capacity. I mean, but, like, you know, Bobby and Kristen Lopez, like, they do it all
the
time.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about them.
Like, yeah, and they do, and, like, their life is is about collaboration because, you know, they have kids and stuff, and that's what they do. That, and they both have their own separate, that's what's nice, I think, about all of these married couples. They both have separate projects to work on, but then they also have ones that they work on together. You know, like Kristen Lopez is doing In Transit, and, yeah, you know, Bobby Book of Mormon, and with, you know, Nell's working on the Mean Girls musical, and, you know, Larry's got just all kinds of, like, I think it probably is about finding the mix of working together, but, like, not too much.
you get enough together time at home. You can't be together 24/7.
It is. It's nice to have someone who understands what you're talking about. You know, you don't have to come home and be like, when audition is when you go in and you sing a song for the director. You know, like that I did that a little bit in my early 20s, and it was exhausting.
Yeah, you don't need to explain an audition after you do an audition. Oh my God. That would be a little much.
That's a good point, yeah.
Okay. All right, so thank you, everybody who sent in questions. Patty, this has been awesome. It's been so much fun, and thank you for being so open about all this stuff. Maybe eventually we'll track down Her Highness when she's back in New York being loud and British or whatever it is she's doing next.
I'm feeling like once she's back on her normal schedule, you know, we can, like, and I've got some other thoughts for, you know, for some other future guests. So I think, I think it's going to be good. I'm going to reach out to some people today.
Reach out to people. You did name drop about half of Broadway in this episode.
I know.
That's okay. All right. Well, thank you guys so much. And thank you for listening to Literally Patty Muir and the podcast and all of Broadway Radio's shows. And we'll let you know when the next episode comes out on social media. And I'm sure Patty will be making sure all of her fans across the Broadway, Arrowverse, Chicago Med communities know as well.
Don't forget Bachelor Nation.
How could I forget? Bachelor Nation. Patty, where can people find you? I can't believe that anyone listening to this doesn't know where to find you online, but where can they find you just in case?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. It's just at Patty Murin, PattiMurin. And then I'm also on Facebook, just Patty Murin. I like friends.
Yeah, you don't have like the traditional like actor page. You just have like, hey, I'm Patty, friend request me and I'll accept.
Yeah, I think like a lot of the fan page thing scares me the most because I'm like, what if no one likes my page? That's like really just the underlying fear of like anything I do. Like, what if no one asks questions? What if no one buys tickets to my solo show? What if no one, you know, it's just, yeah. So that's why I'm like, no Facebook friends, I'm good. At least I got my mom.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Thank you everybody so much. Last week or two of summer. Don't you hear it saying, stand up, time to care? Don't you feel a little tingling in your soul? Well, now the time has come to take it out of cruise control. You can cut out all these pauses later, right? There could be another way. Don't you see that this is so not okay? And Kelly Brianne at Speedy Canaro. And Kelly Brianne, I know I can edit this stuff out.
It's all good.
Why don't we change the world? Come on. Don't you want a little taste of victory?